Please pray with me, O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ. Blessed Master. Dearest Mother. Saints and sages of all religions. I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Received an email from friends who are in Japan, and with the disasters, the tsunami, the earthquakes, the nuclear power plants that are in crisis, Jenna wrote and said, "Just wanted to give you some updates to dispel rumors and let everyone know what information we have regarding Japanese disaster events. Radiation levels in our area of Kanagawa Prefecture, Japan, have increased slightly above the norm. They are at a level that is like getting an x-ray, therefore it is minimal. They have asked us to limit the time outside, keep windows closed, etc. Just a precaution. You may hear about this, but that is just a precaution, and that they are testing the water, air quality, radiation. I know this is true, because of the public health which I'm associated with. Rolling blackouts. The blackouts are somewhat scheduled and based on energy levels being used at the time, so are kind of random. We sat in low light during the rolling blackout today at the town hall meeting, the Army base. Again, the purpose of the rolling blackouts is to conserve energy. And what a great concept that we should be doing all the time, right? With all this tragedy, I hope we are learning to be more conservative and better people. I know I am. If for some reason we experience more quakes, tsunamis, blackouts, etc., I hope you will just consider prayer as your best avenue for hope and peace of mind. We promise to contact everyone if there is an extended outage when phones and computers are operational." And she goes on and down below. "We too have had the feeling of helplessness, of not being able to do much here. Yet I know the prayers are working, and we thank you for them. Rest assured and sleep well, and keep praying for those who are suffering. This is truly the best effort needed at this time." I thought a wonderful perspective that she has at this time. Wanted to read from Memories of Mother by Kate Kohler, Writing with Mother. "In 1983 or 84, I was asked by Mother if I would accompany her to Victoria. Mother had arranged to stay with Pat Downey, the center leader there, and to give a talk that Sunday. It was after her stroke, and she needed someone to drive and to help her dress. I was honored to have been chosen, but needed to bring along my 3-year-old daughter, Nicole. Mother agreed. The weekend was filled with happy times, inspiring moments, and a very important test for me. But in addition, there is an incident that has stayed with me through the years, and I know that moments that fix themselves in our memories are perhaps more meaningful than we can imagine. We were driving home to Seattle, and just north of Everett, encountered a thick fog. I am often a nervous driver, even in the best circumstances, and it was almost impossible to see the road. I reflected that I had two of the most precious people in the world in my care, and the prospect made me even more nervous. Perhaps we should take this exit, I said to Mother, and get a cup of tea and wait till the fog lifts. No, keep going on, Mother replied. You'll be fine. We'll chant. We rode safely on, our voices raised in unison, singing Master's chants and Om Shri Ram. I will never forget Mother's song, Mother's strong, beautiful soprano beside me, blending with the sweet lilt of Dowa of my heart, door of my heart, coming from the little soul in the back seat. Had an unusual accent when she's a little girl. Surrounded by the dense fog, encapsulated in our car, we glided through time and space to eternity and back. No other existence except we three, merged in the holy chance, forever together, forever safe. How can one fathom the lessons the Guru teaches the devotee? Sometimes, only years later, one grasps a little of what has been imparted. The story can be told, words can attempt to capture the moment, but who can describe an experience that resonates not only in the heart, but in the core of one's being? It can only be explained one way, Guru Shakti, that is, the power of the Guru. Jai Guru Dev. From Master's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. And Master here is going through the Pandava brothers and describing their various attributes. Arjuna, self-control and the vibratory fire element in the lumbar center. This center, the Manipura chakra, bestows the fire force of mental and bodily strength to fight against the vast onslaught of sense soldiers. It is the reinforcer of good habits and actions, the habit trainer. It holds the body upright and causes purification of the body and mind and makes deep meditation possible. We see further why this center allegorically represents Arjuna, the most skilled of all the Pandava army, when we consider its dual function. It is the pivotal or turning point of the devotee's life from the gross materialism to finer spiritual qualities, from the lumbar to the sacral and the coccygeal centers, life and consciousness flow downward and outward to materialistic, sense-bound body consciousness. But in meditation, when the devotee assists the life and consciousness to be attracted to the magnetic pole, to the higher or dorsal center, the power of this fiery lumbar center dissociates itself from material concerns and upholds the spiritual work of the devotee through the powers of the higher centers. So it is through this third center at the that Arjuna represents within the spine. It's just below the navel, back at the spine. And that is where life force flows and comes into the body as willpower, your ability to direct life force in any particular direction. So when the devotee begins to learn to lift the life force up towards higher centers, and in the past has only directed it downwardly into the body and body consciousness, that is Arjuna. And Arjuna is a highly trained disciple. He is the positive side of that chakra. And when he directs his mind upward, he directs it towards Krishna, or the ajna, the third eye point within the body. And therefore, it becomes spiritualized. And so this is what Master refers to as the turning point. When the devotee's consciousness has gone very deep in meditation, traversing the physical consciousness and the primary states of the astral soul encasement, he finds the inmost astral spine at the lumbar or the Manipura chakra, the opening from the astral body to the finer soul covering of the causal body. And this is the common opening of the Brahmanadi, or the causal spine with its centers of divine consciousness leading through the Chitra, Vajra, and Shashumna. These are the three levels of the spine, and they represent the body consciousness, the astral or the fine electrical energies within you consciousness, and the causal or the even more refined thought body that is within you. When the life and consciousness have been reversed upward in deep meditation, here is where the devotee merges the stream of Brahmanadi and enters the finer causal realm of the soul, the last encasement through which the yogi must pass before he can, by still deeper meditation, ultimately ascend through the Brahmanadi to spirit. When Arjuna, the power of self-control in the lumbar center, rouses the fire of meditation and spiritual patience and determination, he draws upward the life and consciousness which was flowing downward and outward through the lumbar, sacral, and coccygeal centers, and thereby gives the meditating yogi the necessary mental and bodily strength to pursue the course of deep meditation leading to self-realization. Without this fire and self-control, no spiritual progress is possible. Thus, Arjuna, more literally, also represents the devotee of self-control, patience, and determination within whom the battle of Kurukshetra is taking place. He is the chief devotee and disciple of Lord Bhagavan Krishna, who in the Gita dialogue is being shown by Krishna the victory, the way to victory. I have received several emails from people who have expressed concerns about possibility of radiation coming this way from Japan and for personal safety and just the general sense of anxiety for this world. And in a sense, we are all living on this battlefield. And the things that come to us, whether it is through our direct perception of senses of the world around us, or through the news, or through other media, we get sometimes pictures of things that are going on that are terrible in this world and produce a great deal of harm. There's also a great bit of unrest going on in the Middle East right now. Every day, we are entering into this battlefield. Those are the large world events. They don't include the smaller concerns that we have around finances, around relationships, and all the other concerns that preoccupy our minds. And if we are not careful, through habit, we can turn the life force downward into worry consciousness, fear consciousness, anxiety consciousness. I think it is a fascinating thing that this point in history and where we live at in this North American continent, that we probably have as much safety as mankind has known in all of its history, generally speaking. We have food to eat, we have transportation, we have communication. We have so many advantages. And yet, in poll after poll, it is seen that people live with a level of anxiety all the time. And so just having the physical comforts, just having safety and in a material kind of way, is not a guarantor of having peace. Peace is something that ultimately can only come from God. When the Buddha was first awakened to the problems of this world, he saw disease, old age, and death. And these three inspired in him the fruitlessness of pursuing worldly pursuits only, and made him really want to know what the answers are. If everything is relative, if everything is temporary, if everything ultimately ends in disease, old age, and death, then why pursue all these things of the world that we do? As the saying says, it's like trying to rearrange the chairs on the sinking Titanic. You're going down. Why rearrange the chairs? Why just try to make yourself more comfortable? It's time to find out the greater truths. And it has always been that time. But we look around us and we see most people are truly unconcerned. Perhaps they have adopted a belief system in which they think at the time of death that everything will be revealed to them, they'll go into heaven, and they'll get their answers then. But for the real intrepid soul, that's not satisfactory. We want to know the answers and want to know them now. We're very audacious that way. And we want to know those answers. We need to know those answers. And so we are driven by some inner prompting, some inner drive that will not let us rest until we find those answers. Now, even those who are sincere on the path will come to times when they will become more lackadaisical in their sadhana and their spiritual practice because they don't feel the keen edge of sickness, old age, and death bearing down on them. So they think they have time. And time is a great deceiver because really, we could be enjoying the truth, the bliss, the power of God right within our beings right now. We don't have to wait for any further time. The further fact is that we're constantly creating. So if we're living in ignorance, then we're creating more ignorance. And that goes on from day to day, and we build a thicker and thicker wall between ourselves and the divine. So there is no putting off till tomorrow our divine search of today. We should direct the mind with everything that we have within us. We should remain with that keen sense of focus. Now, Swami Satchidananda said that when we slip from our path, we can always trace it back and see that there was a lack of intensity in our sadhana. And that produced why we had a slippage or a complete fall. In any case, if we find ourselves in such a condition, we wipe ourselves off, we get up, and we get going right again. No time for self-pity, no time for thinking about what could have happened, but rather we just put our mind right back on God, we put our mind right back on our spiritual sadhana, and we get going again. We don't let anything dissuade us. No person, no thing, no situation in this life. I've told you before of an experience that I had in deep meditation many years ago when suddenly my perspective through the ajna was that I was high up above the city of Seattle. I was looking out over Elliott Bay. And before my astonished vision, a missile came in so fast, and suddenly there's an explosion over the bay, and an atomic bomb went off. And I felt all the fear, all the terror, everything that I think most of us would feel on seeing such a thing. And the first thought that came to me is, would I survive? And then the second thought was, as I thought about the sure destruction that was to ensue, would I want to survive? And so I struggled with this, and I struggled to come to peace, and I struggled to understand. It was a powerful experience, and it shook me. Well, down through the years, every once in a while, completely unpredictably, I would have such a vision again. And it would come again, and I was gripped in it. There was no escaping it. There was no backing out of it. The experience would come on me full and complete, and I had to deal with whatever responses that I had within me. And gradually over time, As this experience repeated itself, I began to think about what happened to other people, and I would think of their pain and their suffering, of those who were directly affected by such a condition, by an explosion going off. And then I would think, well, perhaps there's something that I could do for them. And that was a change, that was a shift from totally me and my consciousness to perhaps there's something that I can do for others. And with that, there was a lessening and a removal of the fear. Well, even if I was injured, perhaps I would still be in a position to be of help. And that's how my mind began to orient itself. The last time that I had the vision, this went on for several years. And believe me, it would have been a good excuse not to meditate anymore. Because the fear and the anxiety and everything that it generated in me were real. And I got to sometimes where I didn't want to sit on my meditation blanket thinking that perhaps this vision could reoccur to me. But I stuck with it, and I'm glad that I did, because one day I had that same vision. And somehow my attention was drawn to the explosion itself, and I identified in consciousness with that explosion. And I felt the power of it. I felt the expansiveness of it, quite different than being on the receiving end of it. And I felt God within that power, within that explosion, within that expansiveness. And it set me free. I was completely free from fear. And now my whole attention was absorbed in the expansiveness of God, and it transmuted me, and it transformed me. And the vision never reoccurred after that. So this is the kind of thing that we encounter. This is what Arjuna encounters on the battlefield. And so he represents that turning point. Do we go with the things of the world? Do we go with our fears and our anxieties? Or do we turn our attention upwards? Do we turn it towards God? And therefore, really moving it into a whole new sphere of consciousness. I return back to the Gita. This is a different commentary on chapter 2, verse 2. The Lord said, "In such a critical moment, whence comes upon thee, O Arjuna, this despondency, behavior improper for an Aryan, disgraceful, detrimental to the attainment of heaven?" And the Aryan or Aryan here is translated from Sanskrit, and it means worthy or holy or noble. And Master's commentary, "Having felt God's response, the devotee's consciousness soars to the transcendent Kutastha state, attunement to the Kutastha Chaitanya, the universal Krishna or Christ consciousness. The presence of spirit eminent in all creation and individually manifested in each being as the soul whose voice is intuition. Spirit speaks to the devotee through that intelligible, intuitive voice. O devotee Arjuna, prince of self-control, why are you overcome by dejection? These relatives are your fierce enemies and have but one purpose, to destroy your soul's peace. To feel pity for them is un-Aryan, not befitting a noble saint, a disgraceful treachery to the soul, a weakness that will tie you to the nether spheres of bodily limitation and deny you the heaven of blissful omnipresence. Any sincere, persistent devotee can feel within in meditation the urgings of spirit, but it is evident that the devotee must be far advanced in the path of meditation before he can prevail on the infinite to vibrate its presence through an intelligible voice of counsel. Such a devotee has already gone through many great battles with the senses and has attained a high spiritual state before being blessed to hear the voice of God made manifest through the etheric vibration. A devotee who has once reached that exalted state of consciousness might be supposed to be completely free from all attachment to his lower nature. However, owing to past incarnations of ignorant identification with the body, even an advanced devotee may temporarily lose sight of the divine state and consequently feel a miserable longing for the fulfillments he has renounced, or in other words, those of the body. Mother described this as going over the top. When you have fulfilled all past samskaras, or those karmic residue from past lifetimes, and you have resolved everything in this lifetime. Now, a soul can be free, can be living in his or her oneness with God, and still have these samskaras, that is called ajivan mukta, freed while living. Yet that one will still have some residue of karma from the past and can fall. And so total and complete surrender to the divine is the way to move through and to attain the complete state of realization. We cannot at any time take for granted any presence or of God or any state of realization. It is only when the mind is finely attuned to the divine presence and surrenders itself completely. Now, this surrender goes through many, many different stages as we go through different states of consciousness. As we purify the mind, we move from one state of consciousness to another. And there are many times when we think, well, I've surrendered to God. I feel that attunement. I feel God's presence. Unknown to us, there resides deep in the unconscious mind some residue from past experience. And when something comes up in the world, it triggers it. Triggers some fear. Triggers something inside of us that draws us back. And the mind wants to focus again, once again, on that fear or on that limiting nature of the ego. It can also be a desire. And so this is what is required in order to attain the full state of consciousness, being with Swami Satchidananda and asking him whether he had attained that full state of illumination. And he said no. That Papa, at least at that time, that Papa had said that full and complete oneness with God means that you no longer have to make any effort to keep your mind on God. And he said that he still required some effort to keep his mind on God. He was the living example of this highly, highly developed soul who remained with some thin veil of separation. Now, from the time when I first met Swamiji and years later, I felt that he had attained that state and that he was liberated. He spoke differently. Before, he would speak in reference to what Papa said. And now he would speak as what he was saying directly. And it came from that state of realization, and the illumination was there. So I think he attained to that state. But when we look at ourselves, we can assess how much are we in the divine consciousness? How much do we live there? How much do we feel that presence? How much do we feel guided by that divine consciousness moment to moment? Is it something that's sporadic through the day? Is it something that for days or weeks we can even lose touch with? Or even if we are feeling it day to day, are there times when we're lifted up and other times when we're clearly living in a state of separation? We must be honest with ourselves. We must be the observers of our own experience until and unless we can observe our own experience dispassionately. We cannot know for certain whether our state of consciousness is with God or with the world. And as we enter into these higher states, it becomes all the more subtle and all the more important. During this last period in my life, I have felt within the spine a complete dissolution of any sense of individuality, and with that, a just complete emergence into the divine consciousness. And what God showed me just this morning was the process of that had the complete surrender, that there is a part of our self-preservation that keeps us in a state of individuality. This is me. This is who I am. This is my name. This is my body. Or even more subtly, this is my spirit. Any sense of ownership, any sense of I or mine is what defines the ego. And so when you get to that state where you can surrender yourself completely without fear, because realization is the removal of fear. And that's quite a thing when you're able to come into a state when you do not fear. You have no fears, no fears of death or old age or disease, no fear of what somebody else thinks or says or does or what happens out in the world. You have that inner state of quiet, that peace that surpasses all understanding. This is the great state of realization, and it is available to you. You may attain to it. Each one of us has that capacity. But each one who is here has committed their lives to that project, to that end, to attain that full realization. But in order to do this, we must be scrupulous. We must have that witness consciousness if we're to attain to that. Because these enemies come. And even in higher states of realization, they come to you. But as enemies can pose as friends and thus gain entry to one's home, so material desires, the great enemies of man, can reside apparently harmlessly within his consciousness along with his true friends, the spiritual faculties. The senses appear friendly because they promise a temporary intoxicating pleasure in the flesh, but in the end invariably bring misery. And this is one of the great states of maturity, is when you look at the after effect in any particular action that you take. If you're having a meal and you have some dessert and the sweet tastes very nice, and you think to yourself, well, I'd like a second piece of that dessert. And you take it, it tastes good initially. But the after effect is you feel too full afterwards. Now, before having that second piece, if you were to ask yourself, what will be the after effect of having this second piece? And immediately in your mind, you think, oh, I'm going to feel full. I'm going to feel lethargic. It's a tamasic state. It's actually an unconscious way of trying to deal with anxiety. And so I choose not to do that because I don't want that tamasic state. Rather, I deal directly with the feeling of anxiety, and I let it flow from me. And as a result of that, then I feel the peace that I was craving through that second piece of sweet. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't enjoy the things of this world in moderation. But we should take things in moderation. We should not seek to fill some emptiness that we feel inside with anything from the outside. The world chases after the objects of this world, seeking to find a way to fill that gap that's inside. But that gap of happiness, that gap that lacks peace, is really fulfilled only by God. And when we finally tune our mind that way, when we understand this great truth, it's not that the world is bad or evil. God created this world. It is beautiful. It is filled with divine essence. But it is our desire nature that forces us to look for things outside of ourselves to complete ourselves. That is the destructive aspect. It is where we miss the mark. And as a result of that, we fall into misery. So this is a great, great turning point that is within each and every one of us. Back to Master's commentary. The first effort of spirit is to strike at the root of the devotee's momentary lapse. The pity Arjuna feels for his relatives, the devotee's sympathetic rationalization in favor of the senses, is the channel of exchange between the material and spiritual forces. The spirit warns the devotee not to sorrow over the senses, to lower a drawbridge of pity over the moat that separates the wisdom-castled soul and the segregated, inimical senses, is to permit psychical enemies to break through the ramparts of self-control and overrun the fair inner kingdom. Instead of feeling pity, the devotee should rouse the ardor of psychological battle until every inordinate desire of his senses has been completely annihilated. To sympathize with evil is ultimately to hand over to it the throne of one's consciousness. Do no evil. Do not let evil be done through others by your command, or to tolerate evil by silence. Non-cooperation with evil is the best way, without making a pretentious display of your own goodness. A true devotee will not foolishly attract evil states into himself through sympathy with them. He who feels sorrow for the lost sense happiness and who dares to sympathize with it allots to a lower place the superior, lasting happiness he has known in meditation. Such an ignorant reversal of values is a disgraceful thought for the devotee. Krishna thus refers to this weakness as un-Aryan, an attitude unbecoming one of spiritual nobility. A wise man feels pity for the banished good. A wise man feels pity for the banished good qualities, not for the ostracized evil qualities. So the truth is that every day when we wake up, we stand at a turning point. Either we turn the mind towards the world or towards God. When you think of God and you feel God's presence, and you think of souls around the world who are suffering, either because of physical conditions, or because of emotional suffering, or psychological suffering, or spiritual suffering. All of these sufferings occur every single day. We can feel overwhelmed by them. But for those conditions that we know of and we hear of, to cause a fear and anxiety inside of ourselves is not worthy of a devotee and an aspirant. For us to pray for those individuals, first of all, within yourself, you should be seeing this flow of life energy and consciousness coming through your own spine. Arjuna being the third chakra, just below the navel, back at the spine. Just see that area in your body and soften and open it and allow the life force to come into it. You may feel a change within your body. You may feel a relaxation as that warm, liquid, golden light comes flowing in through that chakra. That is your Arjuna within. And Arjuna focuses his mind upon Krishna, upon the spiritual qualities and attributes, upon the higher vibrations, higher wisdom, higher consciousness. And so you take that life energy and you give it to God. You take it up to the ajna and you put it at the doorway to heavenly consciousness right there. And then you feel that golden light expand all around you and fill out your entire energy field, that electromagnetic field all around you, your aura. And once you are filled up with divine light and consciousness, then you let that go out to all those who are suffering, all those who have been injured. In the case of Japan, all those who have lost loved ones, those who have suffered some injury, those who have lost their homes, all their material things, those who have been cold or hungry or thirsty. And you see them with that same capacity to draw upon the divine consciousness, that within their spine they can draw strength, they can draw comfort, they can draw everything to themselves, creative ideas and solutions to desperate problems, and keeping a calm mind that's open to reason and intuition. You see them filled with that light and surrounded in that light. And you see them sharing that light with one another, as well as the material goods that they have. A calm force takes over, and a calm determination, and a faith takes over that this too shall pass, so that no one gives in to despair. And you see that filling up not only the individuals and groups, but you see it filling and surrounding the entire country. Through your thought and your prayer in this way, you add strength to the better angels that exist within each one of us. And as a result of that, you're helping those individuals. We can help materially, surely. But we can help through prayer and the power of prayer, and that people remain calm and focused on what is the good, not only for the individual, but for the group and for this entire world. And when you do so, you feel more closely connected to God. You feel more peaceful. You feel that strength. And so it is a threefold blessing. You are blessed by that prayer. The individual you're praying for is blessed. And then it gets transmitted out as a general signal to this world. And so it goes out to all this world. And you see this world surrounded and penetrated with that divine light. And that throughout all this world, individual souls everywhere are striving to unfold, to evolve, so that they will rise up into higher consciousness. And through the working out of complex karmas, individuals are gradually evolving to greater and greater consciousness. Now, sometimes the world gives you a different mask, and it doesn't look that way. It looks quite the opposite. But you don't give power to the mask. You don't have to live in a place where you ignore it. It's there. But what you see is something deeper, something that's behind the mask. And when you do so, it awakens that same power, same intelligence within you, and again is transmitted out as a general principle, a general signal to this entire world to lift up to that higher consciousness. You think about all the messages that are sent out about what poor condition we're in, what bad people we are, how things are all wrong. And that's constant drumbeat. And you could come to believe it, but don't believe it. Don't make that your ultimate and final truth. Papa said that one reason that he saw God in everyone was because it was the best thing he could do to help lift that one toward their God nature. And you will see in his writings where time after time he met somebody who brought a terrible mask to him. But he refused to accept the terrible mask. He focused on the individual as God. This is God in human form who's come to me. And that individual is changed, transmuted as a result of Papa's insistence on seeing God within that one. Just think of your life. If everywhere you went and everyone you met, you insisted upon seeing nothing but God, would that not change you? And would that not change the world around you? This is a great spiritual practice. And to remain mindful of that throughout your day, this is a wonderful, wonderful thing. from this last Cross and Lotus Journal. I'd like to read the Universal Prayer by Papa. O Lord of the universe, O Creator, Protector, and Destroyer of the worlds, I come in all humility to thy holy feet and surrender myself entirely to thee. Deign to bless me over thy remembrance, ever with thy remembrance. O merciful Divine Master, give me strength, purity, and peace. Thou art seated in the hearts of all. Thou art all purity, all goodness, and all love. Thou art a veritable ocean of peace and bliss. Thou art the lover of thy devotees, refuge of the helpless, redeemer and savior of those who resign themselves to thee. Make me dedicate my life to thee and to thy service. By thy grace, may peace and joy always dwell in my heart. Thou art mother, master, friend, and all to me. Accept me as thy child and servant. Grant me power to love thee with all my heart. Let whatever I do be a fitting offering at thy holy feet. Make me pure in thought, word, and deed. I lay my mind at thy feet. Fill it always with thy remembrance. Let thy glorious light illumine my heart, O sustainer of worlds, O kind and compassionate Lord, God of gods. Give me in the divine vision, give me the divine vision so that I may behold thee in all as all. Make me ever feel thy constant fellowship. May my life be guided and controlled by thee. The presence be ever with me, in me, and everywhere around me. I beg of thee, I prostrate before thee. Hearken to this heartfelt prayer of mine, and make me thine and thine only forever and ever. Beautiful prayer coming from the heart of Papa. Let it spring from all of our hearts and all of our souls, in all of its sentiments, so that we may know the great Redeemer and find our salvation in that universal vision, love, and service. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the power and the perfection
surging in every cell of my being.
Your love flows through my heart.
Your intelligence flows through my mind.
Your ever-loving spirit
flows through my entire being.
Goes out to this world as a blessing.
Fill me with it always.
And make me know thee
as my all and all in all.
I bow to the light within you. You'll stand with me in healing alms. I'd like to offer special healing alms for Japan and the people of Japan, for all their losses, suffering, sorrow, that they may feel comfort, that they may be guided in the best and highest ways to solve their problems and difficulties, that they may feel that through the world giving to them, that there is a further binding of this world, drawing it together, that we are all humanity, and when we suffer alike. When we bleed alike. and that through their suffering, greater compassion may be awakened within us, and that we may send that compassion through unlimited power of healing of God's energy, His light, and His presence.
Ooh.